This week on Myths and Legends, it's all about Mr. and Mrs. Vinegar, whom I know you've heard of because they're a pretty big deal in the pickle industry. You'll see why pickle jar house pickles are all the rage and also no longer in production. Plus, we'll see why coming unhinged and taking your front door with you is, perhaps, the best home security you'll ever not need. Then, on the Creature of the Week, it's a monster from when the world was young. Tall, feathery beast known as the ostrich. This is Myths and Legends, episode 361, In a Pickle Jar. This is a podcast where we tell stories from mythology and folklore. Some are incredibly popular stories you might think you know, but with surprising origins. Others are tales that might be new to you, but are definitely worth a listen. Today, there are two stories from English folklore about how we look at things. How your perspective changes, whether you're in a pickle jar or in a tree or listening to bagpipes, and how being surprised by a sinister mythological creature might be the best thing that ever happened to you. Our first story today is that of Mr. and Mrs. Vinegar, and we'll find them, as always, in their pickle jar, which is also their home, but it's also still a jar. Houses were nice and windows were bright, but the best by far was a jar. And a pickle jar? I mean, yes, it was a farmhouse through and through, just like it could be seen straight through and through. Honestly, it was an architectural feat. The whole thing was an inverse skylight, more timeless than a dome, and just as beautiful as the sky. And for Mr. and Mrs. Vinegar, it was theirs. It was home. True, every pillow out of place and speck of dust on the bookshelf stood out like a red scarf in winter, but one could always clean. One could dust and sweep and brush until everything inside the pickle jar shone like the sun and sparkled like the moon. Who but the Vinegars knew how accurate that comparison was, seeing as how that was their view all day and night, in jar sweet jar, a jar and a field, a house and a garden. Together, the couple tilled the earth, grew vegetables from seeds, and pickled the harvest inside their home. Then they sold their wares at market and bought more supplies. This was their circle of life. How dare that cobweb think otherwise? It clung to the chandelier with sticky hands, riding the wind between Mrs. Vinegar's broom, dodging each sweep with the most annoying laugh. Really, it was her own grunting that Mrs. Vinegar had heard, but she was too annoyed to assess it. She balanced on the couch with one foot on the arm, the other on top of the backrest, bracing a hand on the wall as she leaned, brandishing the broom like a wand. The cobweb could not remain. Its presence suggested neglect. It had to go. And then it was. Oh, but not the cobweb. The broom, sailing across the room like a javelin, and not at all in the intended direction. Gone from her grip, the handle looked so much shorter now. The end of it protruded from the most beautiful burst of lacy ice, and above it, the faintest hair sprouted and grew. It raced all the way to the pickle jar's lid, and that was when Mrs. Vinegar realized the awful truth. The house was compromised. It was falling apart. She had overcleaned. The broom was not mysteriously shorter. It had shot straight through the glass wall. It was ruined, she wailed, crashing over rows of cucumbers, telling her husband to stop his pruning and listen to her. The pickle jar house was shattered to bits. Who's going to buy pickle jar house brand pickles that don't come from a pickle jar house? Mr. Vinegar shifted back on his heels amid the nest of vines. He set his clippers down on the ground. All the labels would have to be changed, obviously, and the banner on their market stall as well, but a big pickle sticker could hide the inaccuracy in both of those places easily enough. An updated brand could be a good thing. Pickles are pickles, he offered with a sigh. I think the taste will speak for the product. Well, okay, but where are we going to live? And what about all of our furniture? It's all glassy. What if, she gasped, what if it rains on the sofas? What if someone swipes the dinette set? It will be fine. It will all be fine. You'll see, Mr. Vinegar had pushed onto his feet and ducked into Mrs. Vinegar's flurry of arms. In the eye of the storm, he held her close with a hum. New pickle jars the size of houses were in plentiful supply at the market. They would simply go buy a new one. And as for their furniture and belongings being stolen in their absence, why, they would take the front door with them on their backs. After all, no one could break down a door that wasn't there. It was this exact steadiness, this number 9 personality that Mrs. Vinegar had loved most all these years. She herself was a driven 3 to anyone who knew the scale, and to those who didn't, she was a classic get-it-done achiever, the tastiest pickles at the market, a living room remodel completed a week early and under budget. Both had been hers. And the most efficient fresh start after a total jar collapse, there would be no time to lose. And so, off the Vinegars had waddled, with a 6-panel door spread across their backs, so no one would break it down and steal their stuff. They'd moved like a turtle and looked like one too. And that night, only halfway to the market, they became like birds perched in a tree, nestled on top of their door. Sleep wells and don't roll off to your deaths merged into thrums of insect wings and scurrying critters in the shadows. There the Vinegar slept, weary and sore from the day, in search of house and home. Sometime in the middle of the night, Mr. Vinegar startled awake with a pinch in his neck and a chatter in his ears. He glanced down to his toes and saw Mrs. Vinegar's heels trail into knees and arms and a mouth as crisp as a line. It wasn't her mumbling in her sleep then. It was something else. The slightest peek over the edge of the door suspended in the tree yielded only wobbles, and Mr. Vinegar retreated onto his back, clutching the branches on either side. The breeze began to feel like dangerous swells, and he clung, listening, while his heart thumped high in his throat. There had to be at least 3 or 4 of them down below. The voices, so raucous. Maybe 4. Mr. Vinegar could picture them with his eyes closed. In their gravel whispers, he saw grizzled scars worn like badges. In their cackles, he saw the destruction from which they ran. Chaos they created, this band of brothers. These thieves, to put it mildly, too mildly, more likely, they were murderers. Whispers lost their hush in the comfort of the camp down below the tree. Of all the trees to be had, these strangers had chosen the Vinegars. And in the morning, when the sun rose, and witnesses were found eavesdropping from the branches, a waterfall of coins clanked amid laughter in the darkness, and Mr. Vinegar realized that he was shaking. "Ugh, stop your swaying over there, I'm about to roll off the door," Mrs. Vinegar murmured. She rolled over, talking in her sleep. Her voice grew distant, swallowed by grunts and a thud. The door, his wife, oh no! From high in the tree, safely wedged between branches, Mr. Vinegar gulped. He clung and swayed, but he did not climb down. Who could say whether he scurried to safety as the door was slipping, or if it fell because he had bailed on their seesaw of a bed? I mean, Mr. Vinegar could say, and it was likely 100% the latter, but who knows? The only hard truth was that the morning would eventually arrive, and when the sun rose, Mr. Vinegar hoped the missus would understand. "Am I alone?" Half her body had gone numb, and with a tingly arm, Mrs. Vinegar peeled her hair from her eyes and called out again, louder. She'd slept the whole night on the door, just not in the tree, because she had awoken on the ground at a ridiculous angle. Head down, with feet in the air, the plank was beneath her, like an uneven teeter-totter. Mr. Vinegar was nowhere to be seen. "Hey, I guess I fell to the ground," she hollered. "And wait, are you still in the tree?" "Yes, but I'm coming down now, see? I'm joining you." Mr. Vinegar slid down the trunk like a fireman. He knelt beside his wife, blubbering something about, "I'm here, and not my fault." But then, before Mrs. Vinegar could say a word, he was pointing and shrieking about something right behind her. "On the ground, look, under the door." Here? No, like, over there. Behind me, under the door, like I said when I said under the door. Mrs. Vinegar leapt backwards, and her heel sank into a thick pickle. It felt like the ones they'd made a couple years ago in the pickle jar house, the ones that were too big that year. Only this wasn't a pickle at all. It was the curled fingers of a hand attached to a bent forearm that disappeared beneath the shadow of a door. It explained the odd angle of the board. You were asleep, you see, Mr. Vinegar cut in. Then he came clean with all of it, about thieves making camp at the base of their tree, of the horrid conversation overheard from the branches, the falling door, the awful silence that followed. They all ran away crying about the sky falling. Well, not all of them. The thief was dead, and all around the door, like a full body halo, lay more gold pieces than the Vinegars had ever seen. It was just what they needed, this gift, delivered right to their door. How convenient, how timely, how bright their future, as bright as the first light upon their new gold. We'll see what the Vinegars choose to do with their new haul, but that will be right after this. I still remember the day we got our first email asking if Myths and Legends sold t-shirts.
Oh, that was so exciting, but also made us panic.
Yeah, merch could not have been further from our minds, but now it's easy to sell stickers, shirts, and more, thanks to Shopify.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, whether you make a little podcast like us or offer something entirely different. Whether you're just launching or you have a real-life store, even if you just hit a million orders.
Shopify also helps you sell everywhere, like when we sold posters at the Emerald City Comic Con and every day online. With their all-in-one e-commerce platform and their in-person point-of-sale system, whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
The key moment for us always will be that very first t-shirt we sold. You asked and we delivered. Even though it was out of our wheelhouse, that's the power of Shopify. It helped us do what used to feel like the impossible. There's a reason Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and they're behind global forces like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen.
As we grow, Shopify grows with us. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/legends, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/legends now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/legends.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. There was a time not that long ago when I didn't know how to relax.
You? No way. But no, I know what you mean.
Like, if there's work to be done, shouldn't I be doing it? That's how I always feel.
You cannot go on like that forever, though.
And I've learned that. Figuring out what's important, what's a priority, played a big role in helping me be able to adjust my schedule. I have therapy to thank for helping me do that.
Therapy helps you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. It can reveal your perspectives, let you see where a shift might be helpful, where positive coping skills can be handy. I always come away feeling a little more like myself, a little more prepared to face the day. It's a good thing.
Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If any part of you is curious about therapy or interested in maybe giving it a try, take a look at BetterHelp. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. Step one is easy. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/myths today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/myths. For generations, Vinegars have been pickling all sorts of vegetables in-house, but mainly cucumbers, Kirby's, gherkins, on rare occasions, mini English varieties. Great-great-Vin Vinegar had started the whole thing way up the vine, but gold coins? Gold coins were absolutely easier to pick. They jangled like a little wind chime as they fell into a satchel 2x2, and though the riches left by the thieves ended up being half of what it seemed, it was twice what the Vinegars needed. And four times what they'd ever earned in a whole season from Pickle Jar House brand pickles at the market. Mr. Vinegar lurched mid-chortle and spun toward the hand on his shoulder. The satchel of 40 coins thumped against his hip, and his wife smiled.
We can buy a new pickle jar. A cow?
A jar? We'd need a new jar to live in, said Mr. Vinegar. And they would have one, Mrs. Vinegar insisted, by the money they made from milk and butter from a dairy cow. A stream of money that would continue long after moving into a new jar. I mean, it's like long-term investment, diversification, whatever, you know. Mr. Vinegar thought it was brilliant. And so, she turned back toward their field of broken jar, dragging their front door behind her, while he continued onward to the town in search of a cow. Play it cool, Vinegar. You can do this. You've got to do this. For a good 10 minutes, Mr. Vinegar had hiked the central aisle of the market, with sweaty palms jammed in his pockets. Near the middle of the stalls, across from the chickens, a weathered farmer stood beside a pen of goats with crazy eyes. And one red cow. A lady cow, too, which was just what Mr. Vinegar was after. With every pass, he drew closer and closer to the prize, inching like the tide, hoping to not appear too eager. All for the bargain to be had. Nay, the bargain to be made. On the last walk by, he'd slowed long enough to meet the farmer's gaze. And now the time was upon him. How much do you want for it? Vinegar cooed through a sideways mouth. The farmer tossed a head and laughed. How much you got in your pockets? No sooner had the question been asked than the lump of coins appeared between them. 40 gold coins! It was all Vinegar had in his pocket. And he was ready to argue his case, in case it wasn't enough. Somehow, he would convince this farmer with crossed arms to trade his precious cow for all 40 of these done. I'll have you know. Wait, what did you say? I said sold. Sold? I won't say it again. Well, I'll be sold. That is amazing. That was a steal. And as the satchel of gold fell from one hand, while the frayed ends of a rope fell from another, Mr. Vinegar was not wrong, but just not for the reason that he thought. You won't regret this, Vinegar said over and over. He clutched the rope so hard his fingers felt numb. You've made a good choice, my friend. And maybe it was a good choice, based on Mr. Vinegar's upturned mouth and shiny eyes. He paraded his new cow up and down the market lines, basking in the afternoon sun and the afterglow of his glorious win. What a bargain, what a steal. He was clear across the square by the time the chicken farmer ducked across the aisle to elbow the goat-slash-cow farmer with a smirk. Yeah, I mean, that was absolutely a steal because that cow wasn't worth 4 pieces of gold. Fists bumped and heads shook, and at the far end of the market, Mr. Vinegar turned a corner, coaxing his cow to follow. Around the bend, the music was the first thing he noticed. That was the commanding way of bagpipes. But as notes blended into one another, Vinegar soon realized that the musician in the center of the crowd was more than what he seemed. He was also a dancer, with a cap inverted like a pot at the end of his melody. The hat swept left and right, while hands from the crowd flew from their pockets and wallets to drop pennies into the collection. Coins clanked, and the round bottom of the hat stretched to a point, with all the weight. Then, the musician-dancer played a second tune. And at the end of that one, the empty hat flipped upside down as before, filling again with donations and tips. It was free money. No, it was free money drawn by the piercing song of the bagpipes beneath the figure's arm that made the people empty their pockets. Vinegar tugged on the rope coiled around his hand, but the new cow would not budge. She'd made a mess, too, and was probably hungry. She'd need shelter and bedding, and then, of course, he'd have to milk her in the morning and churn butter and then cart all that back to the market again and again. A third tune cut the air, and Mr. Vinegar tugged the rope again. He looked at his cow. He looked at the bagpipes, at the hours and hours of work, and the joyful dancing man. The stubborn cow versus a shower of pennies and an upturned hat after what, a song and a jig? He gave the rope a final tug, bigger than all the rest, already forming a speech in his head. The cow had been a steal, for him, and now this musician-dancer fellow as well. All Vinegar needed was the right angle. It was still mid-afternoon when Bertie the cow trotted away through the crowd. As it turned out, No angles were needed at all. No convincing words, no straining against the rope. The fellow with the bagpipes had been eager to trade instrument for bovine. And after a scratch behind the cow's ear, that had been that. "I shall call her Birdie," the fellow had said. To which Mr. Vinegar had replied, "No hard feelings?" There was, after all, no use in explaining to the ex-musician the lopsided deal that had, once again, fallen very much in Mr. Vinegar's favor. It was still mid-afternoon, therefore, when Mr. Vinegar grinned and lugged his new bagpipes into the center of the market and began to play an improvised ditty he called Ode to Pickle Jar. To his delight, passers-by stopped in their tracks. Vendors craned their necks and children halted their games. And was that a lady reaching for her pocketbook? Was that a gentleman padding around for his wallet? The hat would be out shortly, he wanted to say, but of course his mouth was occupied. His hands, too, working the chanter of his bagpipes, his arm squeezing. He was starting to get the hang of this. Oh, but why were the people backing away, clutching their loved ones and screaming a little bit? Where were they going? "The hat will be out shortly. Save your tips until then," he called out, but had to return to the blow stick. His dance became a jog, then a sprint in their wake. He picked a different tune as he chased his audience. But because he'd never played a bagpipe before, Generosity in E minor sounded an awful lot like Ode to Pickle Jar, which was to say, not exactly melodic, possibly discordant in a bad way, but it was loud. And wasn't it sheer volume that made bagpiping a success? Well, it put a pep in people's step as they flooded from the market, all while the hands clamped on their ears. The crowd cut around the next corner, and Mr. Vinegar pursued, but the ground was slick, and he off balance, and right beside a fruit cart, he fell flat on his back. It was a total wipeout, accented by the clatter of pipes across his chest. But they'd had to hear the show so they would donate. "We heard it," came a voice. "The whole town heard you. And we don't want to hear any more." The words came with a helping hand. A hand that helped him find the road from town, and another one with a shove that told him it was time to go. But the bagpipes were supposed to earn an income. That's why Vinegar no longer had a cow. How was he supposed to know that there was a learning curve, or that the entertainment industry could be so difficult? In his arms, the instrument started to look more like an oversized purse, bursting with a mishmash of clarinets. He blew and pressed, hoping another toot might change the man's mind. But the man at the market, the only one who had stuck around, swished a finger again. "Please, please stop. You drove away all the customers. It is time to go." Those words, and others like harassing shoppers and not welcome, chased him away like hurled rocks. Also, the hurled rocks chased him away. Free money, it seemed, had turned into no money at all. It was early evening when the wind picked up. And though Mr. Vinegar was still feeling bruised, you know, on account of the bruises, the chill running down his back took his mind elsewhere, at least for a moment. The bagpipes could be repurposed, a multi-spout watering can from the garden, perhaps, firewood on the way home, seeing as how he would have to camp soon for the night. He rubbed his fingers together for warmth. "Hey, you're the bagpipe guy. I heard about you. Good stuff." Several paces ahead, a wiry fellow lengthened his stride and cut across the path. Yep, that was him, all right. The wiry fellow was a big fan. He was giddy. All Vinegar noticed, however, were the man's hands. Those knitted brown mittens fit like a glove, which is probably not what you want for mittens, but whatever. What a contrast to Mr. Vinegar's club-like mitts, which had been unable to play the bagpipe, and now in the cold, were unable to feel anything at all. "You must be warm in those mittens," he grumbled. "Wish I had those." "Oh, these?" The wiry man shook both hands like tambourines. "Warm as toast, they are. Can't complain. Don't intend to." "How much for the pair?" The wiry man clutched his hands to his chest. His mittens? "Yeah. How much for them?" From one pair of hands came the pair of gloves. From the other, a limp bagpipe. We'll see Mr. Vinegar continue to make great decisions that profit, well, everyone but Mr. Vinegar, but that will, once again, be right after this. It was another deal made. And just before dusk settled in, Mr. Vinegar was trading up left and right and taking initiative. And best of all, he was now warm. Without a word, he blustered away through the trees and toward home. Mr. Vinegar was a vinegar from a long line of vinegars. And right now, Mr. Vinegar was sour. His back ached, his knees pinched, and his head pounded. But if I had your fine walking stick there, sir, I do think I could hike as well as you and be home before dark. Mr. Vinegar put on a smile and braced against a tree. You want my walking stick? The traveler glanced at the branch in his hands, gave it a shake, and then looked to the pile of sticks and branches gathered at the side of the road. But can't you just, I mean, it's a stick, and I've never seen a walking stick like yours. Vinegar pressed, limping over. Please, I need to get home. I need to be with my family. This stick is my ticket there, please. There was a flash across the traveler's gaze, and Mr. Vinegar knew in that moment that he had won. A deal, another one. A trade. A pair of warm gloves in exchange for the finest walking stick in all the world. I hope you make it home safely, sir, said one. No hard feelings, came the reply. And off waddled Mr. Vinegar, leaning heavily on his new cane, still hoping to make it home before midnight, still hoping that his lungs might not burst and his legs not give out before reaching his wife and their fields. Two steps, and then a thwop as the stick landed just ahead. Two steps, the stick, two steps, the stick, a laugh. Wait, two steps, a stick, a laugh. Okay, what is so funny, and who is laughing? For a moment, nothing happened, even as Mr. Vinegar whipped up the underbrush with his fine cane. But then, there it was again. The distinct sound of laughter from a magpie? A shadowy bird flapped into the clearing, landing several feet above. It laughed again, staring sideways at Mr. Vinegar, and then it spoke with words like forsooth and foolish man and blockhead. That one it said twice. And in between blocks, it detailed all of Mr. Vinegar's past purchases from the day, as though anyone could have forgotten. It is 40 gold coins for a stick, the magpie cawed. The stick flew like a javelin, but because Mr. Vinegar had little energy left, it never reached the bird. And because the bird was a bird, it flew away, still laughing, still taunting, still making Mr. Vinegar angry. He fanned his face and walked a circle. And when he'd calmed down, once again back at home, he came back to Mrs. Vinegar. And so that is why I do not have the stick anymore and why I have returned empty-handed. But all in all, it was a productive day. Right, honey? Good day? With taut lips and not a single blink, Mrs. Vinegar looked as though she might wallop him on the side of the head. Like she might pummel him with insults worse than the magpie, but she did none of those things. In an odd way, this felt worse or just as bad. Mr. Vinegar held his head, unsure what it was he felt. Shame, frustration, and agony? Definitely buyer's remorse, that was 100%. But there was nothing he could do at this point. The cow, the bagpipes, the gloves, the stick, they were all gone. And the gold. He'd not really thought it through, and really that was the problem that led to such despair. They were ruined. Together, they felt it. But time has a way of changing things. This they, more than anyone else, also knew. Time could change a lowly, disgusting cucumber into the perfect pickle. It could bring clarity to water once clouded by silt. It could bring clarity to thought, as well. I know gardening, that's what I know, Mr. Vinegar said to the sunrise later that week. And I know keeping a house tidy. I can clean like the best of them, sometimes too much. A head came to rest on his shoulder, and they grinned. Together, the Vinegars would start over. They would earn their money in new ways, and when they'd saved enough, they would be able to buy a pickle jar to replace the old. And then, who knew what they would do? Who knew the limits of what they could do or the types of people they could become? They didn't, but they set off to find out together. heard so many fairy tales throughout the years on the show, and even stories that have a similar progression of trades that don't really make sense. But this one had something different, and that's the piece I really liked. You have Mrs. Vinegar, who's a get-it-done achiever, and Mr. Vinegar, who lives more on his heels than his toes. He's kind, but street smarts are not his forte. We've seen this dynamic before, and a lot of times we see one of those sides portrayed as a good thing, and the other as a source of humor, and sometimes nothing else. Here, however, I saw something new. The Vinegars meet somewhere in the middle in the end. That's where they find hope in a future. That was where their best solution is. Not in milk and cheese, which was Mrs. Vinegar's idea. Dairy wasn't even something they were passionate about anyway. But the solution also wasn't in any of the number of get-rich-quick trades and big ideas that Mr. Vinegar came up with. In the end, it was both of them returning to the basics and to each other that made them stronger. And that's something we can all appreciate. Our shorter second story today begins with a woman on the road home at night, where she makes a startling discovery. It was nearly dusk when the woman spotted it, there in the ditch. A pot. Though her feet ached from a day spent running errands for people in town, this was how the woman made her living, she wondered why someone would throw out a perfectly good pot. It probably had a hole in it. Still, if it had a hole, she could use it for her flowers. It would at least drain. She scurried on over and saw that the pot did not have a hole in it. In fact, it was full of gold. The coins tumbled through her fingers. Who had left this? She knew everyone in town. Maybe it tumbled off some rich man's wagon? No one in town had this much cash. No one traveling would know that she was the one who took it. She was as worthy as anyone else, she figured. So she looped her fingers around the handle, and it budged. But only a little. A good 10 minutes of grunting and sweating, and she managed to get it out of the ditch. Though there was no way she could carry it home. She had an idea. She looped her shawl around the round bulk of the pot and tied a handle for herself on the other end. The shawl was a thick woolen thing and wouldn't tear. Besides, she could buy a new one now. All the things she could buy. She thought about them as she dragged the pot. She wasn't unhappy. She was just tired. With this gold, she could, well, what could she do? She could do anything. She could sit by the fire in a grand mansion and drink tea all day, like the queen. But, well, wouldn't people grow suspicious if the little old lady who lived on the edge of town bought a massive mansion? This sum of gold wasn't trivial. It was a life-changing sum. It was a generation-changing sum. She would need to guard it. She would need to hire private security for when, not if, the original owners came back for it. And then she would end up surrounded and paranoid and dead when their goons came for her like an early modern British tea-obsessed Scarface. No, no, this gold was not for her. She went back to unloop her shawl and then, oh good, okay, it wasn't gold. In the fading light of the day, out of the ditch, it was clearer. It wasn't gold, it was silver. Okay, silver was better. Her pulse began to lower. Silver of this quantity wouldn't necessarily draw the same attention. She wouldn't be Rolls-Royce rich, but she would be like a paid-off, nice Toyota or Lexus rich. It would draw far fewer eyes. As she dragged the pot, she began to think, though, how she would sell the silver. It would probably be a good deal of work. The people in the town couldn't give her all she hoped to earn, and she would probably need to make several trips to the nearest city. When she stopped, again, to rest, she went back to look at it, and oh, good, okay, she breathed. She had been wrong again. In the pale, milky light of the moon, she could see that they weren't silver pieces at all, but small chunks of iron. That was actually way better. She could exchange these for pennies in her town, and the surrounding villages, with all the different smithies. Pennies were far, far easier to manage, and she wouldn't have to explain anything. This was awesome. Okay, good. The deep ridge in the earth followed her nearly to her fence. Well, what was left of her fence. She had been meaning to get to it, but the stones had long tumbled away. She pulled the pot inside, wiped her brow, and unlooped her shawl. She got a lantern, and when she returned, in the clearest, brightest light of the evening, She saw the stones in the pot. Laughter rang out across her garden. Oh, her eyes. She couldn't wait to tell her friends in town about this, how she dragged a whole pot of stones back to her cottage, thinking that it was gold and silver and iron. Still, though, the stones were actually the perfect size for her wall, and she could still use the pot. All in all, good day. Then, the pot began to rumble. It began to shake. It began to snarl. It grew four sharp, lanky, shadowy legs, two ears, and a long reptilian tail. It was no longer a pot at all, but a monster. Two red eyes studied the woman, and a mouth full of sharp teeth opened, and the woman laughed, clapping. The creature cocked its head and then, confused, backed up and loped off into the night. The woman was beside herself with joy. This was amazing, a cryptid, a mythological creature, a bogey beast, and she had been dragging it along all night. This was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and she got to see it. It was better than all the gold, silver, iron, or rocks put together. And unlike all those things, she would always carry this experience with her. And so she went in, thankful for her grand evening and everything she had gotten from it. We've told a similar story to this on the member feed, but I love it. I love how the woman adapts to each of the changes, showing gratitude each time. She never actually had any of the things. It was always a mythological beast, but that didn't matter. It was always the best possible outcome because she could always change how she looked at it. Like Mr. and Mrs. Vinegar, sometimes what you need is what you have, as long as you can appreciate it. Next time, we're back in Chinese folklore with a story of a talking pot that makes everyone's life worse and tiger murder. If you'd like to support the show, there's still a membership thing on the site. For less than the price of a bag of doll heads for sale on Amazon for some reason, you can get extra episodes and ad-free versions of the show that are far less unsettling. Check out mythpodcast.com/membership for more info on the membership or look us up on Apple Podcasts. The creature this week is the ostrich from South Africa. So long ago, at the dawn of the world, there was this creature called an ostrich. It was like a tall bird with a long neck, an oblong, feathery body, and long, skinny legs. Once again, this was a long time ago, and this is a mythical creature, so no worries if you're having a hard time picturing it. Anyway, this legendary bird had a secret, and Mantis was the first one to catch wind of it. Mantis, of course, being an insect you might know as the praying mantis, but this was before they converted en masse in 1000 AD. Anyway, Mantis noted that ostrich's food smelled great, way better than the dead and raw and cold things everyone else ate. Vegetables, very small mice, they all looked like they had a nice brown to them, and they were plump and juicy. Mantis had to know why, so he followed ostrich and saw armpit fire. Ostrich would lift its wing up and shove meat and veg into its armpit, cooking it. One night, while ostrich slept, Mantis snuck by and shoved a stick into its armpit. The stick came out on fire, and Mantis used it to cook food not just for himself, but for the early humans. They all knew they had to get this fire. So Mantis told ostrich that they needed its help grabbing the delicious plums on the top branch of a nearby tree. Ostrich, remember, was a jerk, so its plan was to keep the plums for itself. Well, as it hopped up the branches, Mantis followed, and craning its neck, the ostrich reached out. Instinctively, it raised its wings to balance, and at that moment, the fire was gone. Little Promantius stole the fire for the humans from ostrich's armpits and helped to usher in a new age. It said that, after that, the mythical ostrich would never again raise its wings high enough to fly, and preoccupied with being robbed, it barely even built a nest for its young after that. What's even odder than a giant bird with a fire under its wing is that, in the year 2024, A large number of the worldwide population apparently still thinks ostriches exist. That's it for this time. Myths and Legends is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Broke for Free, and the Creature of the Week music is by Steve Combs. There are links to even more of the music we used in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.